So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to our weekly happy hour here on Trending. Sister Tina Alfieri will join me in just a little bit. You know how we sometimes think, you know, our habits, even those habits that are semi-bad, maybe not that bad, we tend to think, well, they're making me happy, I feel good, so why not? We'll discuss how those bad habits can not only actually get in the way of your happiness, but also your holiness. It's our weekly happy hour, because we want to find more joy in our life and get to the root of happiness, not just the emotion, but true, authentic joy. Now, I totally changed a little bit of what I wanted to talk about at the beginning of the show today, because I had two incredibly overwhelmingly loving and kind experiences today that reminded me of why the pro-life witness is so important. I was leaving Mass earlier today, and I was chased down by a woman who shared with me that she had been praying for me during my pregnancy. I don't think I remember meeting her before. I may have. I forgot. I don't know. But incredibly nice woman, and she shared every Friday they've been praying and offering the rosary for me and our sweet baby girl. And it was so overwhelming to have, you know, strangers. And I know, you know, we're not strangers because we talk to each other, right? I don't get to see all of your faces, but we do interact. And afterwards, she said, "Is there anything you need for the baby? Anything I can give you at all? This is what our ministry Our pro-life ministry is all about, supporting the moms, making sure the babies have what they need later on." And this reminded me of the criticism I so often see people give to the pro-life movement, that pro-life people are just obsessed with the baby, and that's all they care about. That's not what I've seen in the pro-life work that I've been involved in, working in the crisis pregnancy center systems. It's not at all what I've seen. I've seen men and women stepping up and being willing to sacrifice and give so much to moms in need and their babies. And I think that this is really shown in an incredible way. I was walking out of the store just about an hour ago. And as I come walking out of the store, there's this massive Bath and Body Works line next door. And you know, in order to get into a store with social distancing, I do find that Bath and Body Works tends to be that store that has the longest line. Has anyone else experienced this? It is so long. Well, as I'm walking out of the store, oh, we need hand sanitizer. That's what it is. Karen's telling me. She's informing me. The Smell Good hand sanitizer. Now I get it. Well, as I'm walking out of the other store, this gentleman's like kind of waving at me to come to him. He said, "You know, young lady, come here for a second." And I come walking over to say hello. And he said, "I just wanted to tell you thank you for choosing life. And you can you just wait 1 second?" And he wanted to give me money. And I said, "Oh, I'm pro-life too. I'm pro-life too. That's so generous of you. But no, like I'm pro-life too." And I start talking to him, and you can tell just not by his face, he was so grateful to see a woman who was pregnant. And I get this. It ended up coming out that he's been involved in our 40 Days for Life campaigns, and he stands out there in front of the abortion clinic looking at people, women in crisis pregnancy. And it is so hard to watch those women walk in and then to watch them walk out. And you know what has happened to their baby. And to see this man literally in tears because he saw someone who was super pregnant, who was walking out, he said, "What can I do for you? What can I do for you?" And I said, "No, I've been involved in 40 Days for Life campaigns." I ask him his name, and I'm talking to him. His name was Paul. And Paul, if you're listening, you just made my day, because you're a reminder of the face of the pro-life movement and the fact that we are not just pro-baby. We are pro-woman, and we are doing everything we can to transform the circumstances of the culture we live in and we see surrounding pregnancy, surrounding moms, and the challenges that they go through in this culture. And so as I was talking to him, it ended up coming out. I said, "Oh, well, my name's Timory." He listens to Relevant Radio. "Paul, thank you for listening. But more important than anything else, thank you for standing in front of that abortion clinic. Thank you for supporting women who are pregnant." Because I was talking to my mom the other day, and she said she was at the store. While she was there, there was a woman who was pregnant, who was the cashier, and she was talking to her about her baby. And she said, do people not really, like, acknowledge pregnant women and their children today? I said, no, they don't. Many people don't talk about it, don't acknowledge it, won't, you know, look at your stomach, won't interact, won't, you know, say congratulations. Many people, you know, either have the pro-life camp who's totally ecstatic and wants to interact, and you have another side who maybe has a post-abortive past, who it hurts to see a pregnant person or convicts them, or we also just don't like to acknowledge the humanity, the personhood of that unborn child. And so here this man was insisting on giving me money. It didn't matter. He was so excited that I chose life. And I'm looking at him and I see tears in his eyes. And again, it comes back to this. He's not just willing to say he's pro-life. He's willing to do anything to help that woman and that baby. That brings true joy. There may have been tears in that interaction, but when we are willing to sacrifice our lives for others, it transforms who you are. And I have seen some of the most incredible people come out of the pro-life movement. And I truly believe it's because when you are faced with such evil, such the opposite of the gift of self that we are created to participate in terms of our human reality, we talked about that last week a lot here on the show. What does it mean to be human? So the whole podcast, you can go back and listen to it. What does it mean to be human? Has to be do with the fact that we are social creatures and we're created for life-giving, self-giving love. And when we don't live in accordance with that, we really struggle. But when we do live in accordance with that, even when it's hard, even when that means standing in front of that abortion clinic for hours on end, praying, not knowing the outcome of those prayers, not knowing if perhaps she aborted this child, but later on, because of your prayers, will never go back to that abortion clinic. And so I really want to challenge you, if you are not involved in pro-life work, if you've not stood in front of an abortion clinic and prayed, if you've perhaps never been involved in a crisis pregnancy center, I want to encourage you to go. Because this is one of those experiences that will really reveal to you the importance of living for others, seeing others and the important need that they face, the circumstances and the challenges. And to be pro-life, I do have to say, sometimes we have to fully understand all the context of why someone is choosing to do what they do. Not that we would ever approve and say, yeah, go ahead and abort your baby, but that we have that level of compassion and understanding, that we understand where they're coming from. There have been circumstances standing in front of the abortion clinic counseling women, or even when I've been there in the crisis pregnancy centers themselves, when women have sat there and you hear these circumstances and you think this is a horrible circumstance. But circumstances change. Quality of living can change. How much money someone has in their pocket in order to care for their child can change. And I was reminded of that today, that truly the pro-life movement, if you are truly pro-life, you are willing to do what is necessary to help men, women, and these babies thrive in our culture, in a culture that doesn't like to acknowledge new life necessarily coming into it. And not only are you helping others, but you're helping yourself. And I hate that phrase where it's like, help others to help yourself. But it's because when we help others, when we see that gift of self that we're called to, it transforms who we are. And here we are in the midst of Thanksgiving. And I am so thankful for those people in the pro-life movement who have been willing to step out, talk to strangers, reach out to them, love them, and call them into a lifestyle that perhaps no one else has ever called them into before. You're listening to Trending with Tim Rhee. My guest today is Sister Tina Alfieri. Sister Tina is not only a Catholic hermit in Florida, but she is also a certified sex addiction specialist. She works with people who are struggling with addictions, bad habits, and Sister Tina and I wanted to dive into the topic of happiness and how it can be pretty elusive, especially where it comes to bad habits and addictive behaviors that we think are making us happy. Welcome to the show, Sister Tina.
Hi, thank you, Tim Rhee. I hope you're doing well.
Thank you. I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you join us. And when we were talking about happiness, I threw this your way as a therapist, someone who's worked a lot with addiction. You commented, well, happiness is elusive. Can you elaborate upon that and how we get that confused today?
Certainly. Happiness is elusive. And oftentimes in modern, especially modern Western culture, we have this notion that we should be happy all the time. That's not realistic. It's also a bit infantile, to be very frank, thinking that we're supposed to be happy all the time, and that if we're not happy, then something is wrong. Nothing could be further from the truth. We can be very content in any circumstance if we remember that we are children of God and that God is with us. He will not fail us, and we are never alone. So, you know, the idea that I'm supposed to be happy 24/7 is just not conducive to good mental health. You know, we have a range of emotions. God created them. He gave them to us. They're for our good. Emotions do help to inform us. They don't have to rule us. They should not rule us, but they do help to inform us. If we are feeling sad, we can take a look at that somewhat objectively and ask, well, what's going on in my life where I might be feeling this sadness or despair or discontent? Those emotions can help to inform us to where we can make some logical, rational decisions about, you know, I've been feeling this way for a while, ever since I took that job 2 years ago. I thought it was going to be one thing. It turned out to be something totally different. I really think I need to change my job. So we're not going to be happy 24/7, and that's okay. There's not anything wrong with that. We need to be mature adults and mature in Christ as well to discern and be able to take a look at logically what is going on that might be contributing to any feelings of despair, depression, doubt, discontent, any of those things. So being happy is really not going to be helpful in helping us to do that inward look to find out, what do I really need, or what is God asking of me? Many times we go through periods in our life where we are experiencing great crosses that are not of our making. Family members who are ill, I think that's a great burden to bear. Oftentimes when we have a family member who is ill, I know my prayer sometimes is, God, I would rather I'm the one that's ill than having to watch my family member go through this. But
moms are great, you know, at this. I know my mom.
Yes, exactly.
So many times as myself and my siblings have been sick.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a grace and it's a burden, but we're not going to be happy all the time. We're going to have burdens in life that are not of our making, but they can help us to grow in holiness. So being sad or down, depressed, is not necessarily a bad thing. And I could go into a whole nother conversation about how to know when it is a bad thing, but I think most of us know that the main marker is if it goes on for a long time, if there are thoughts of self-harm, if there are changes to our eating, we're either eating more or eating less, changes to our sleeping more, sleeping less, etc. But I'm just talking about those periods of feeling down, feeling blue.
The emotions.
And thinking, well, there must be something wrong because I'm sad. And I'm like, well, you don't think there's something wrong whenever you're happy.
Right. So let's tie this into how the emotion of sadness can confuse us, especially the emotion of happiness as well, because you work a lot with people with addictive behaviors. And so often addictive behaviors are really fueled by our desire to be happy. They make us feel good. And we could talk about, you know, physical self-touch and pornography mm-hmm. and how that's something that even medical professionals encourage today. But in mm-hmm. reality, it's a false sense of happiness.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you bring this up. You know, addictive disorders are maladaptive coping mechanisms. They are coping mechanisms that have derailed, gone off the edge to where now they're out of control and they are a problem in and of themselves. So the solution, or what we thought was the solution, has now become also another problem. For instance, alcohol, drugs, gambling. What we think is, you know, a drink or two after dinner. Now it's a drink or two before dinner, a drink or two with dinner, and now a drink or two after dinner. And this is happening more often than not. And maybe the spouse is complaining. Maybe friends are complaining. You know, gee, I think you might need to cut down. So addiction and addictive disorders of all kinds are maladaptive coping mechanisms. They work for a while. That's why we use them. They do work. But eventually, if we continue, for many of us, they can become addicting. And that's where the solution has now become just another problem.
And so we're really not happy in the end. The moment we were, but as you said, this coping mechanism, we talked about this a lot a couple weeks ago. We'll have to post a link to that show now about how we use various coping mechanisms. We think, oh, this is great. It's going to make me feel better now, but it doesn't. So are we lying to ourselves and just trying to convince ourselves that we feel good now? Or does this tie into kind of this idea of self-deception as well?
Well, we're not really lying to ourselves, because these addictive disorders, whether it's porn, masturbation, gambling, drinking, drugs, they actually make changes in the brain. They provide pleasure. So we're not deceiving ourselves. There's actual biochemical reactions happening in the brain to where these things are pleasurable.
So then we become addicted to those chemicals and hormones that are released.
Exactly. Correct.
So
that's
how do we
issue?
Yeah. So how do we overcome that stimulation? Because it could even just be, I'm happy. I think I'm happier because I picked up my cell phone. I get that dopamine rush from all the notifications I have because I've been posting a bunch of statuses and photos trying to get those likes. How do we overcome this false sense of happiness and really reality, to be frank?
I think a very good and often overlooked way to start is by doing a really good examine, an examine of conscience.
Yes.
And, you know, there's St. Ignatius taught two methods of the examine. One is called the general examine, and the other is the particular examine. And in the general examine, that's like the examination of conscience you do before you go maybe to your monthly confession. You take a look over the past month. What are my mortal sins? What are my venial sins? Where have I failed and lacked charity and doing the will of God? So you're looking at everything over the past month in kind of a general shotgun approach. That's fine. That's a general examine. A particular examine, according to St. Ignatius, is when we look at a particular virtue we are trying to increase in, or we look at a particular sin we are trying to decrease, and we do that twice a day, usually around lunchtime, and then again nighttime before we go to bed. And we're not taking a shotgun approach about how has my whole day been. We're looking at, let's say, for example, the sin of pride. And the virtue, its opposite is the virtue of humility. So you can work it from either growing in the virtue or decreasing the sin. So let's say it's noontime, it's lunchtime, you're sitting down for lunch. Maybe after you say your grace over lunch, you take just 2 minutes. It doesn't need to be more than 2 minutes. And you think, okay, since this morning, since I woke up and I've been at work, it's now lunchtime, how have I failed in charity? How have I failed in humility?
or patience,
how have I acted on my pride?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Whatever that is for you. I love this. And I actually have never read to do this examination twice a day. You know, people are going, I don't even make that daily examination. But I think that that's really helpful. You know, you sit down for lunch, you do it in the middle of the day. How do I increase virtue? And then how do I decrease sin? And I like that you emphasize we're focusing on one particular thing. I mean, maybe two or three, but focusing in so that we can find that opposition to grow.
Exactly. And we focus in because we need to be focused in like a laser beam. It's the difference between a shotgun versus a rifle. You know, a rifle is a very targeted type of kind of attack instead of this big general shotgun approach. If we want to make progress, we need to be very targeted like a laser beam.
Ooh, I love that. We're going to be back with Sister Tina Alfieri. She is a sex addiction therapist and coach, and we're going to discuss true happiness and how to discover it here during our happy hour. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans are available at relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I have to throw this up on my Instagram. We'll post it on Twitter now. What has made you happy during quarantine? What have you done differently? I would love to hear, because here we are. It's coming up on the end of the year. Who knew this whole year would take up? I mean, the masks, the outside masses, the no access to mass and the sacraments at one point. Who thought we would have experienced what we have this year? And there's been a lot of adapting, readjustment, changes to the way we live. What have you loved? I know some people who have said, I love working from home. I didn't think I could like being home so much. I think people are suddenly discovering the whole staying at home, being a stay-at-home mom even, isn't as horrible as some people thought that it could be. Because I know a lot of people who said, I can never do that. But now they're saying, I like being home. I like being around my kids. Maybe that's you. I would love to hear from you, whatever it might be. Maybe you've started praying the rosary in the evenings. I've heard a lot of people say, we have started praying the rosary together as a family, and it has been a game changer. So let us know. I'll post that on Instagram after the show, but it'll be up on Twitter now. Sister Tina Alfieri is with me. She joins us regularly. She's a diocesan hermit as well as an addiction recovery coach and therapist. We've been discussing how happiness is elusive. We tend to think that certain things will make us happy, and in fact, they might make us feel good at a time, various bad habits and addictions. But in reality, we have to do the work to grow in virtue and happiness. Sister Tina, there's no substitute for happiness. You know this as an addiction specialist. Where do you direct your clients to help discover this?
Well, happiness is an inside job. You know, it comes from within, and that's where the addictions cause an issue. Is just like Saint Augustine said, I looked everywhere outside, but oh God, you were inside. So we keep thinking in a materialistic world, we don't even have to be speaking about addiction. We just think about a consumer-driven materialistic world. We think that by buying these things and bringing them into us, that this is going to make us happy. And it doesn't. It's temporary happiness. Long-lasting happiness can only come from within. And it comes from within because of that relationship we have in Christ. There is no other substitute. Right. You cannot buy this. You can't. They don't sell it in a six-pack. You know, you can't run to the grocery store and purchase it. It's only through this relationship with Christ that we have true happiness, and true happiness that can actually sustain us, even when everything around us might be crumbling and falling apart. Now, we're not going to be happy in the midst of trials, but we can be sustained and carried by the grace of God, and that makes us happy. Yeah.
And this is the exact difference between happiness and joy. We may not be happy in the midst of a trial, but we can stay joyful because we're rooted in God. And correct. It's so much deeper than the emotion of happiness. That's why I would love to call this the joy hour, but I feel like some people just might not get it. And so we stick with the happy hour because we all want to be happier, but we don't quite get that what we're chasing after in our happiness isn't actually what we need. Now, you and I were talking about how even in dire circumstances, you can be what is ultimately the virtue of being joyful. Let's talk about this in some of the examples. For example, you and I were discussing how St. Paul is someone who is joyful even in the face of adversity.
Exactly. So St. Paul was being held in prison, knowing he was doomed to die, and he was singing psalms and praying. Boy, if I was in prison and I knew that I was going to be dying, I have to admit, I'm not sure that's what I would be doing. I'm not that holy. I am nowhere near that. So I'd probably be doing a lot of crying and praying, but I'm not sure I'd be singing psalms and praising God. So that's a great grace. And we also have a fantastic example in a more modern day saint, Saint Maximilian Kolbe, one of the martyrs of Auschwitz, who was, he has a fantastic story. I encourage you, if you're not aware of Saint Maximilian Kolbe, you can go on the internet and look up his history. The last name is spelled K-O-L-B-E, Kolbe, and he was eventually in Auschwitz because of some transactions that happened in the concentration camp. He was assigned to die with, I believe it was 10 other men, by starvation in a bunker. And prison guards, when they would go in to check on the men to see who was alive and who was dead, St. Maximilian Kolbe was always in there praying, praising God, giving encouragement to the other prisoners. They were all starving to death. This was how the Nazis were killing them and torturing them. And at the end of, after 2 weeks, St. Maximilian Kolbe was the only one left alive. Unfortunately, the Nazis just needed to get rid of him because it seemed like he was hanging on there. Everyone else that was in the bunker had already died, and so they did end up killing St. Maximilian Kolbe. But what was so profound is at his canonization, or the cause into sainthood, where there were several witnesses, some of the janitors, some of the prison guards, they gave eyewitness accounts to how St. Maximilian Kolbe was in very profound prayer and seemed like joyful in the midst of all of this death surrounding him. And he was actually trying to do the best he could to assist those who were in the bunker with him who were also starving to death.
How is this possible? I mean, it's something that we can't even fathom because we are so used to our own comforts. And I think about how the story you mentioned with St. Maximilian Kolbe, and then also the story of St. Paul. St. Paul, when he was singing in prison with Silas and they were giving praise, even in that moment, there was an earthquake and the prison doors opened up so that they could actually walk out, but the prisoners stayed in as the guards woke up because they thought, oh my gosh, the prison doors are unlocked. They were about to fall on their swords and kill themselves because they knew it was a death sentence. Paul comes shouting out from the prison cell and he said, don't worry, we're still here. Like, we're still here. There was even this choice to remain in that persecution for making a sacrifice to God, just like St. Maximilian Kolbe sacrificed his life for another prisoner. And Sister Tina, this reminds me of something St. Jose Maria Escrivá said. He said, you are not happy because you make everything revolve around yourself, as if you were always the center. He said, you have a stomach ache, or you're tired, or they have said this or that. And he goes on and he says, have you ever tried thinking about him and through him and about others? I thought that that was so profound because we're always so wrapped up in our physical comfort, that this can really take away from being connected to God and connected even to what we actually need on a spiritual level, the level of the soul, not just the body, because we're body and soul.
Exactly. And, you know, kind of going back to the topic we were discussing a bit earlier before the break about, you know, a particular examine of conscience, another way that we can kind of check ourselves, so to speak, is acts of mortification. Mortification means kind of quelling and mastering the passions. We can forego that drink with dinner, especially if we think this is problematic, then we probably need to mortify ourselves and begin to rule our passions instead of having our passions rule us. We can practice small acts of mortification. Give up the alcohol, especially if this is something that's problematic and causing issues. There are many things that we can do to try to take inventory, so to speak, about, is this what I'm doing, this drinking or maybe gambling, whatever the particular addictive or bad habit before it even gets to be an addiction, is this really helping me grow closer to God? Sometimes we need to take a hard look, yeah, and say, you know, it really isn't. Let me start really ruling my passions instead of having my passions rule me. I'm going to give up the alcohol, the cocktail before dinner or the drink with dinner. I'm going to give up the gambling, buying the scratch-off lotto tickets or going to the gaming casino. I'm going to, you know, it's not really helping me grow. Mm-hmm. And put that effort into other things that do help you grow closer to God.
Sister, this is so important because it might not even be the really, like, bad things that we're struggling with, mm-hmm. you know, that extra drink or eating in excess or mm-hmm. porn or whatever it might be. It might be something much smaller than that. It might be finding a greater sense of purpose in what mm-hmm. we're doing. You know, you mentioned taking inventory. Sometimes I think it has to do with value, and we value one thing more over another, but we haven't kind of shifted our thinking before. For example, you know, I've learned I can't fast while pregnant, and so I've had to learn mm-hmm. to instead offer tiny sacrifices. And I had gotten pretty good at fasting prior to being pregnant. You know, it was a total grace. You know, all this intermittent fasting as well, I think it teaches you to eat a little healthier so that you know mm-hmm. how to manage the fast. But when I've been pregnant, I've noticed, you know, making these small offerings. You know, maybe it's, okay, I don't like this food because there's no salt on it, but I'm not going to put the salt on. Or mm-hmm. I'd really like this sweeter, but I'm not going to add the sweetener. And it's so small, but it's a value exchange. We talk a lot in business about value exchange. Well, what has a greater value? Me having this sugar or this salt, me having this extra drink or looking at the porn, or is there a greater value exchange if I instead offer my desire for this up and offer this sacrifice for someone else or a particular intention? And I find that we see greater value when we put a purpose behind not doing something.
And I'm wholeheartedly in agreement with that. And I think that you bring up something very great, very relevant. When we talk about mortifications, many people think they have to do this huge thing, like automatically cold showers in the morning, sleeping on the floor. It's like, no, you can do small things with great love. Start mm-hmm. with small mortifications. Don't have that second spoon of sugar in your coffee or tea in the morning.
Or don't have the coffee.
Or don't have the coffee, or don't yeah. have the jelly on the toast, you know, just have the toast. So, you know, we can start with very, very small things and then kind of grow and work our way up to maybe some of the bigger mortifications. But I do also see that sometimes when we talk about mortifications, people are very devout, very good Catholics, very passionate, they want to jump in with both feet, and they kind of end up jumping and diving in the deep end and find out that, you know, sleeping on the floor instead of using the mattress, I'm going to sleep on the floor. Maybe that's too deep for me. That's too deep of a place for me to start easier. Yes.
This is reminding me, I think it's the Exodus 90 program. Is that the correct? It's a program specifically for mm-hmm. men. And mm-hmm. it was fascinating because about 2 years ago, it had been happening, but 2 years ago, it got really popular. And I know a mm-hmm. lot of guys who dove in, and I mean, we were talking cold showers, no sugar. I mean, it was like very, very intense. And Sister Tina, mm-hmm. it was fascinating because I had a lot of friends who were doing it, and then I knew some priests who were not only doing it alongside other priests and seminarians, but guiding the process. And mm-hmm. there were camps of people in terms of, you know, some said, I can't do all of this, so I'm going to modify it from the beginning. There were mm-hmm. others who went full throttle, and then what would happen is they'd suddenly completely check out of their small group, because you're supposed to have a small group as well. Yes. That you know, you have that accountability, and they would mm-hmm. just stop responding because it was too mm-hmm. much. And I was too laughing because one of my friends, Father Tim Grumbach, he's on the show often, he said, I was getting brain freezes from the cold showers. And this is how intense this Exodus 90 was. But it was great because it was teaching people how to fast. For some, it taught them how to do that. It taught them how to make sacrifices. Mm-hmm. But for others, like you're saying, that's not going to be where it begins.
Right. I like to just take a more gentle approach. I would like for people to be successful so that they can understand that we can do great things, you know, small things with great love. You know, not all of us, maybe we have health conditions, can't sleep on the floor. If we were on the floor, we couldn't get up off the floor. Maybe we can't take cold showers. We've got health conditions. So, but you know what? You can do other things, and you can do, give up that coffee, give up the tea. If you're not doing something on Fridays already, if you're not able to abstain from meat due to health reasons, then we are asked to do some other form of penance or mortification on Fridays. Just start there.
Amen. That's Sister Tina mm-hmm. Alfieri. She's an addiction specialist and therapist, and you can find her at bloomforcatholicwomen.com. She's supporting women in particular who perhaps have a spouse or loved one who's had a pornography addiction. So be sure to check that out. We'll post a link in the show notes at relevantradio.com/trending. The website's Bloom for Catholic Women. Thank you, Sister Tina. Perhaps you find yourself decorating for Christmas a little early this year. I don't know about you. I caved. I'm officially listening to some Christmas music. And I always say I don't listen to it until like the earliest Thanksgiving night. And because realistically, we say, oh yeah, after Thanksgiving. And sponsorship for Trending with Tim Ray is provided by Catholic Singles, a dating app that connects single Catholics based on faith, values, and shared interests. More info at CatholicSingles.com.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You know, this has to stop happening. This is the second time I've hit something accidentally on the board, and it took me off air. People are going to think that I'm in labor. All of a sudden, we cut to a break. I'm sorry. I'm alive. Baby's still right where she's at. My poor husband, if he was listening, he'd probably be like, what's wrong with me driving home right now? I was sharing a story, though. My husband came home a couple weeks ago, and he goes, so when do we usually start listening to Christmas music? And he's fishing, and I'm wondering, where's he going with this? I said, well, you know, we wait until Thanksgiving. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's good. And he said, well, why do you wait till Thanksgiving? I said, well, because 1 year I started playing Christmas music the day after Halloween. And by the time Thanksgiving was here, I was done. I listened to so much Christmas music, I was just done. And I don't want to do that to myself again because I love Christmas music so much. But there's something fascinating happening this year. I know we have in stores, I mean, Costco, Christmas starts in August, you name it. The stores have already transitioned before we've even gotten kids back to school. But this year's a little different. People are decorating their own homes early for Christmas this year. And I think it's because it's been such a tough year for so many people. The uncertainty that we've all experienced, the change of lifestyle, maybe the change of communication and interaction with other people, that FaceTime, I'm talking face-to-face, not your iPhone and whipping out your phone. You know, it's fascinating. My producer Karen's saying, I have pumpkins and poinsettias intermingled with one another. Maybe that's been your year. Think about all the things that we have had intermingling, including having, I mean, we had two offices going in my living room at one point, and then I vacated during COVID to the bedroom, and then my husband was working in the living room, and I was sick of being in the bedroom, he was sick of the living room, and it has been quite a year. So if you started Christmas a little early, good on you, because Christmas, we are reminded, is a season of giving. I think that's the reason a lot of people tend to love Christmas. There's a joy to it, even if they don't understand Christ. There's that spirit of giving that is so prevalent, even within a secular Christmas celebration. The giving of gifts, wanting even that desire to give that so-called perfect gift to someone. I know those people are out there. They love to be the perfect gift giver. And so as I look at this, it reminds me of the importance of understanding that joyful living, even in the face of challenges. We are finding ways to remain joyful, and our coping mechanism this year tends to be putting the Christmas lights out, mixing pumpkins with Christmas decorations. Maybe, I would love to see this, maybe people are actually Christmas lighting their pumpkins this year. Instead of on the inside, we're going to see pumpkins like totally done up like in Cinderella. Because doesn't she turn a pumpkin into the coach for the ball? That's what we're going to see in front yards this year for decorations. Well, this joyful living really came to the forefront of my mind today when I was reading about St. Columban. And I may be saying that wrong, forgive me. He was exiled for rebuking a king, King of Burgundia. Now, this is fascinating to me because he was, I was going to say quarantine. Boy, quarantine is in my mind right now. He was exiled for essentially rebuking the king for having many concubines, or having concubines at all for that matter. Wow, what are we willing to be quarantined, basically our version of an exile, right? What are we willing to be quarantined for? Because I don't think there's much we would take this quarantine back for. What are we willing to be an outcast for in society? Because Saint Columban was willing to make that sacrifice to say, well, this is what's right. This is what's true. But not just, you know, for standing on principle and this is for principle's sake, but because this is what is good for you, my dear king. And this is what I will stand by. Even if you're willing to exile me. And here we are, we're complaining because of our quarantine, but we haven't been cut off from everything and everyone we know and love. Yet those who have been sent into quarantine, or sorry, I keep saying quarantine, into exile, have been cut off, aren't allowed back into a particular area, are maybe in hiding even if they are. And St. Columban ends up saying this. He says, many lose their true home because they have greater love for the road that leads them there. This quote, we're going to post this on social media because it is so profound. Many lose their true home, that is heaven, because they have greater love for the road that leads them there. We would rather enjoy every little thing happening right here on earth than spend our life eternally with God the Father, who created us, who knows the purpose for every function of our body, every thought of our mind, every desire that we have. We'd rather momentary pleasure here on earth than remaining in the love and presence of our Lord, who loves us unconditionally. We can only understand a fraction of unconditional love seen from our family members. Perhaps you have a family member, maybe a spouse or a parent, who absolutely adores you, who you know there's nothing you could do that would cause them to stop loving you. That's only a fraction of how much God loves you. Yet, as St. Columban says, many lose their true home because they have a greater love for the road that leads them there. We have to remember that we are just on a road. We are pilgrims in a foreign land. And St. Columban talks about how we need to turn our backs on all evil and put aside apathy. I think it's important that he says that we need to put aside apathy, because he very easily could have just left the king to go on with what he was doing with all of his concubines. But St. Columban says, no, you having concubines is wrong. And he was sent into exile over it. We don't even like being in quarantine. We don't even like our masks. Don't get me started on the whole mask thing. But there are so few things that we're willing to do because they make us uncomfortable. Yet he was willing to stand on principle, on truth, on the truth of what is good for another human person, and even sacrifice his own comforts for this. Sacrifice his own land and his living in his country. And so when he speaks about laying aside all apathy, he gets it. To overcome lust, he gets it. When he says to live joyfully with a good conscience, pass over from the road of this world to the blessed and our eternal home with God the Father. And he says a little later on in one of the pieces I was reading from him, he said, let us keep to this principle, therefore, that we should live as travelers and pilgrims on the road, as guests of the world, free of lusts and earthly desires, but let us fill our minds with heavenly and spiritual forms, singing with grace and power. Notice that replacement that this great saint encourages us in. He said, yes, we need to live with principle. We need to live as pilgrims on the road and not people who are meant to remain on earth for forever. But then he says, you have to replace it. He's saying, let's fill our minds, our bodies, our souls with heavenly things, with good things. And this is what I was reminded of when I was talking to our addiction and habit specialist here, Sister Tina Alfieri. She was talking about how you need to do that daily examination of conscience. You need to go in with a shotgun, a direct gun to what you need to work on in your own life. And so she was talking about how this starts with a daily examination of conscience, but that happens twice, the Ignatian way, where you're doing it both at noontime and before you go to bed. And how when we start doing this, when we start going in with that laser beam, with, as she put it, that shotgun, we start to replace the bad to increase the good. We root out that particular one or two sins that we're needing to work on, we're struggling with, and we elevate the opposite virtue. Do you know what that sin is that is really the root behind those big issues that you are struggling with? And do you know what the opposite virtue is? I challenge you, know your virtues. Know them better so that you can counter those sins that you are struggling with, because that is what will bring you great happiness. And when St. Columban talks about replacing kind of these lusts, these desires, this kind of earthly focused attitude, it makes me think about something we've been discussing a lot here the last couple of happy hours on Trending. And that is letting go of social media a little bit. Letting go of television some. We talked about how people are getting more sleep. They're actually happier. They're having better conversations with other people. Things change when you're willing to give up earthly pleasures and comforts. What are you willing to give up? So I shared with you, my husband and I, when we moved a couple months ago, we decided to get rid of our TV. And I think I've maybe watched half of a Hallmark show on my iPad since then. And then I watched a horrible movie so that I could talk to you about it. That is the movie Cuties, the film on Netflix. And I watched it because there were mixed messages about what was coming out. You can catch that episode. You can find the podcast and listen to it. But that's all I've watched in terms of movies. I think we went to the actual movie theater. And by the way, I get why the movie theater was such a big deal. Because the movie theater was so much more fun and exciting and eventful than it had been. But my husband and I were talking about last night, we were kind of wishing that we could, you know, watch a show, and we thought about throwing out our laptop, and then we didn't end up doing it. I remember getting into bed, and I said, wow, if we had, you know, decided to watch that show, because I want to watch Mandalorian, the Star Wars show, We would have gone to bed late. He's like, we probably wouldn't have prayed our rosary together. We may or may not have cleaned the kitchen after dinner. And we started going through all these variables of probably what would not have happened if we decided to watch that show. And we wouldn't have gotten enough sleep. All these things would have happened. I went, wow, it would have been great to watch that show. But I'm really glad that we're getting to bed at a decent hour. I'm really happy that my kitchen is clean. I'm really glad that we prayed our rosary and didn't make an excuse tonight because we were too tired because really we decided to watch Mandalorian. And so I realized in reading about St. Columbine and how he didn't care about his own comfort. He was willing to be exiled in order to stand for what was true and right for another person and say that to them. Yet we're not willing to try and work on our social media habits. We would much rather watch TV. And I'm not sharing this because, like, woohoo, Timmer got rid of her TV. There are other things that I've replaced it with. I know that. You know, I've been on social media way more than I should. Part of it is probably because of the quarantine working from home. But it is a reminder that we need to replace the things that we struggle with, the things that give us comfort, with good things, with good habits, with praying the rosary, with having a clean house, with having good conversations with other people. I'll be back tomorrow here on Trending with Tim Ray. Catch the podcast at relevantradio.com/trending.